To the Batmobile.
Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Holy hole in a donut!
Hey guys.
I never said thank you.
And you'll never have to.
We're bad guys. It's what we do.
Let's put a smile on that face. I'm Batman.
Welcome to another episode of Gotham City Central, a Batman podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me is one of my co-hosts, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. Just exhausted after a long week and not ready for the massive winter storm that's heading our way this weekend.
Yeah, folks, apparently Mr. Freeze is going to attack some portion of, or at least my portion and Ryan's portion of North America. So,
Someone pissed off Mr. Freeze, Captain Cold, and Weather Wizard.
Yeah, and they're all that's a good point. They're all converging in a super villain team up. So we have to, you know, get ready for that. We have to brace ourselves for that. And how are we doing that? Well, instead of waiting for Batman and the Flash, because the Flash is busy cameoing on television. Batman is somewhere in London, not showing us a suit yet. And I don't know.
Have we even gotten any other like set pictures?
Yeah, we've got a couple of them. No, the proper phrasing, Ryan, is illicit set pictures. I just want to point that out.
That have to be approved of through a certain fan site.
Yeah,
I think they are.
Yeah, the authority on all things, Gotham City related. But,
if you know who I'm talking about, I love y'all. I do, but come on now.
Yeah, I mean the word illicit is a little bit ridiculous. You know, like come on. But no, we've got a couple. We have patented on a motorcycle,
on the bike. Our
first not a bad cycle, but just a regular.
Our first a potential blurry image of Farrell as Penguin.
Mm-hmm. We got the Action News van,
but that just feels like it's. Maybe they've gone to shoot inside for a few weeks. I don't know.
Yeah, they're like these people with their cameras. We're going inside. But we're bound to get the pictures we all want soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because in February, I think middle to late February, the production is taking themselves to Glasgow. And they're going to be doing some outdoor filming with the famous Batmobile. So we are bound to get our first look at the Batmobile and Batman's costume when we film those scenes. And we've seen, if you've been on Twitter, I almost want to call it, even though it's not the dark web, but seeing as those pictures are described as illicit, I kind of want to call it the dark web. But no, if you're on the internet, in social media, you will have seen the areas of Glasgow where they will be shooting. And my God, is that place perfect architecture for Gotham.
Apparently, I've met on these pictures, so I'm going to be looking at Glasgow.
Yeah. The architecture is just, it looks perfect for Gotham City. And, very, very appropriately gothic and grandiose. So I'm very pleased with that choice of locale. So we got to hold out a little longer. We're not going to talk about the final Birds of Prey trailer on this episode because we're doing that on our next episode. So look out for that. But we are going to talk about a little bit about the Huntress tonight. It's not going to be the one that's featured in the Birds of Prey live action movie. It is going to be, i.e. Helena Bertinelli. We are going to be talking about Helena Wayne, who is the daughter of Earth 2, Batman and Catwoman. And we have two different debuts, origins, iterations of her that we're going to discuss tonight. The 1976 version, and the, I believe it's 2013, right, Ryan?
2012, 2013, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so the pre-crisis and New 52 versions is the one we're going to be looking at. So for anybody who still has the misconception that I am totally against the pairing of Batman and Catwoman, I'd like to inform you again that you were sadly mistaken, because I actually, the Helena Wayne version of Huntress is my preferred version. That's not to say that I don't like Helena Bertinelli, because I do, but the Helena Wayne version is my favorite of the two. And I very much am for Batman and Catwoman being together, because obviously if I'm a fan of the character that is their daughter, then naturally I would be a fan of them getting together. My issue is, and has always been, how they are written. And I did not like the way Tom King wrote them. That's the distinction. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I'm very much looking forward to those two characters being on screen again in Matt Reeves' Batman film. But so I do like those two characters, and I do like when they interact, and I do like when they're a couple. I just like them to be written as adults, not 15-year-olds on Tumblr. But do people still use Tumblr, by the way? And I'm not talking about the Batmobile.
Not as often as we used to.
All right. The only Tumblr I like...
It's not called the way of MySpace just yet.
Okay. And for the record, the only Tumblr I prefer is the one from Batman Begins.
Although I think a lot of people got turned off of Tumblr when they decided that, and this is true, pornography was no longer allowed on the site. So,
yeah, censorship is its own. It's a crazy ball of wax.
But it's fine if you like label a pornographic picture only for
appropriate labeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. But to just completely then on top of that get rid of it,
Hey, listen, we all know these lawmakers that are trying to ban it or watching it. So come on, who are we kidding? Anyway, this is not the should they ban pornography podcast. This is the Gotham City Central podcast, and we don't know what their laws on that sort of thing are. We'll have to ask Commissioner Gordon. I'll tweet at Jeffrey right about now, and he'll probably block me for it. Or call some authorities. But anyway, so we're going to talk about those two books or those two iterations a little bit tonight. And we're doing this because we are starting a new segment of episodes that are going to be recorded and air sporadically, where we review the 2000 and three series, Birds of Prey, which starred Ashley Scott as Helena Kyle, who is basically Helena Wayne, just a version that did not take her father's last name, instead took her mother's last name. There's a reasoning behind it. We'll get to that reasoning when we actually review the show. But this is a sort of a little primer, a mini primer on the Helena Wayne character. So that's why we're venturing into this territory here. So without further ado, let's do it. Ryan, just before we talk about the issues themselves and the stories themselves, what was your first introduction to the Helena Wayne version of the Huntress?
Helena Wayne. Probably a faint memory of my dad watching the Birds of Prey series. Now, he's watched it all the way through.
Is he coming on the show tomorrow?
No. So, actually, when we start this little watch through this series that we're doing, it's actually going to be my first time watching it, because I've seen the pilot, but that was like 2-3 years ago, and that's it. So I'm actually really looking forward to seeing, you know, this iteration of the Birds of Prey, this Huntress and Oracle and Canary and Harley Quinn.
That's right.
I mean, I'm more personally have always been more familiar with the Bertinelli version of Huntress, primarily from the Arrowverse. That was actually kind of my first more vivid introduction to the character of Huntress, but again, that was Bertinelli, not Wayne or Kyle, you know, whichever universe we're talking about.
Awesome. Yeah, mine was very literally the Birds of Prey TV series. I don't know how I had heard about it, but I think it was through a commercial on TV. Probably it might have even been during Smallville that I'd seen a trailer for the show, and then, you know, I went online and I read more about it, and I found out that, you know, more about the characters and Helena Kyle and daughter of Batman and Catwoman. Huntress and, you know, the whole, I basically had the bio of the character from the show, and then I did, so I'm like, oh cool, this is a comic character, and you would forgive me to think, oh, maybe this is something the CW is just creating, or the WB at the time is just creating a character that they can then, you know, use for their TV show, but it was actually a character from the comics. So then this was around the time when I was just getting back into comics. So then when I go back and, you know, search the internet for the comic book iteration of this Helena Kyle character, mm-hmm. you know, I type in Huntress and I'm getting information for this Helena Burton. I'm like, who's this? This Helena Burton character. And I'm like, who the hell is this? Where's the other one? Where's the one from the show? And then, you know, you do some reading and you find out about Crisis and how she had been the character of Huntress post-Crisis had been altered and sort of became the Helena Bertinelli version, and you know, all that to a returnee, to a lapsed comic book reader, all that Crisis, post-Crisis stuff was a headache. So I at that point I was like, ah, screw it, I'll just watch the show, because, you know, back in those days I had no intention of picking up let's say a Birds of Prey comic. I was literally collecting at the time of that show's debut or entrance into my public consciousness. And I was literally collecting four comics at the time. Three comics at the time. the Superman Batman by Jeff Loeb, the Batman post Jim Lee, or you know, post Jim Lee, when Jim Lee had finished his Hush run, and then Superman when Jim Lee started his run. So I had no, you know, those were back in my idiot, I call them the idiot years, where I thought I could keep my pull list down to three titles. Funny how long that lasted. But I thought,
how long did it last?
Okay, let's see. I added Superman, and then I read a couple of months of that, and then I think, well, wait a minute. There's Action and Detective. They both feature Batman and Superman. I have to get these. So there were two added. And then shortly thereafter, my friend told me about Rebirth, the Green Lantern. So I'm like, ah! And I'm like, I didn't know Green Lantern other than the dude in the Justice League cartoon. So my buddy's telling me about it, and he's like, you know, it's basically Star Wars meets Superman. I'm like, well, that can't suck. I got to pick that up. And I did. And then, well, I mean, the Flash is part of when I started reading. Then I said, well, you know, if I'm reading Green Lantern, I'm reading Batman, I'm reading Superman Action, might as well read Justice League, because all these guys are in that book. And then I'm like, wait a minute, Flash is in Justice League. I got to read Flash. And then I was reading Flash. And before you know it, I had way too many titles. And I've now pared them down again, but it's still more than three. So that stupid logic of mine, within the span of 4 months, I think my three issues had ballooned to about eight or nine. So I would fail as a Green Lantern because I have no willpower. So I had no intention of collecting the books. I thought I'll just watch a show, and that'll be the end of it. She was my first. Ashley Scott was my gateway drug into the Helena Wayne Huntress. That's how it all came to be. Who should I go first with my version of?
Sure. Let's do it.
Should we do chronological order? Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So my version appears for the first time on November 2nd, 1977. In a book called DC Superstars, and it is issue number 17. And what this the aim of this book was to highlight, you know, newer characters, or give the origin tales of some of the secondary or lower tier, if you will, kind of characters. So in this issue, there are origin stories for Green Arrow, the Legion of Superheroes, and then last but not least, Huntress. The cover actually features Huntress in the foreground, and then in the background, bursting into the through a doorway, are Green Arrow and the Legion of Superheroes. And they're kind of looking in shock and awe at this new character, the Huntress. It's a really cool cover. The cover was by Bob Layton and Joe Stanton. So those were the individuals responsible for that cover. The writer was... it says here several writers, but the three that are mentioned here are Jack Harris, Paul Levitz, and Denny O'Neill. I know that Paul Levitz wrote and co-created the Huntress character. So he was responsible for the Huntress chapter. And Joe Stanton provided the art for that chapter. Also, in that in that same day of November, let's see, 2nd of 1977, Helena Wayne made her another appearance in All-Star Comics number 69, which was a JSA comic at the time. And so simultaneously, she made her first appearance via the Origin and her first appearance in a JSA book. Now, the way I recommend reading it is read DC Superstars number 17 first, because that's her actual origin, and then go ahead and read All-Star Comics number 69. It'll add context if you have the origin story first. It sounds obvious, but just in case anybody wants to go back and read. And these are available digitally on Comixology for the low price of $1.99. But the cool, so basically how this starts off is this book basically tells you right off the bat that a multiverse exists. There are Earths that are very similar to each other, Earth 1 and Earth 2, but there are slight differences on each Earth. It then goes on to tell you about how both Earth 1 and Earth 2 have a Batman and Catwoman that were adversaries at one time. And it said the Earth 2, which is the Earth that we were on, I mean, it made very specific that the Earth we were on was Earth 2. And it said that their battle began in 1940. So it you know, it does a great job of basically giving you a sort of compass of where you are and what's happened. So you know that it's the Golden Age version. And it points out that their battle first began in 1940. And it's funny because the page that you see them actually in combat is on a boat, which is, I get what Tom King was trying to do with his, did we meet on a boat or on the street? He was paying homage to both Earth 1 and Earth 2 meetings of those two characters. But, I'm sorry, he was paying homage to post-crisis and pre-crisis. My issue with that, what he was, so I respect him for paying homage for both. My issue was every friggin' issue, we had the characters regurgitate. We met on a boat. No, it was the street. And literally from issue 25 to 86, after a while, that gets annoying. But anyway, I digress. That's not what we're here to talk slash complain about. These versions of Batman and Catwoman met on a boat. They had an altercation. Eventually, Catwoman turns herself in for her crimes. Batman is impressed by her turning herself in and pledging to go on the path of the straight and narrow. He waits for her until she gets out. She gets out, I believe, and they marry in 1955. There's a nice panel of the wedding. That's another thing that Tom King punked the audience on and didn't give them an issue 50, but we got it here, or we got a flashback of it here. And they show us a couple of happy years for Bruce and Selina, like in, you know, a quick sort of montage kind of way. We see the birth of Helena, and then we're caught up to sort of quote unquote present day, where Bruce Wayne and his daughter are playing backgammon. I don't know if you've ever played that game or heard of that game.
I've heard of it, but never played it. Yeah.
Anyway, so they're playing the game. By the way, I should point out that at this point in Bruce Wayne's life, he is classified as semi-retired. Dick Grayson has left the Batcave, as it were, and gone overseas to fight in a war. I can't remember where, but he's off. He's off fighting a good fight. And so Catwoman gets a call She's very shocked. She takes off in her car and goes to meet an individual by the name of, and it's ridiculous, so I have to pull it up because you'll laugh. It's very of the time. She meets up with a man named Silky Cernak. I'm not joking. It's a very Stan Lee-ish, you know, alliterative name. Basically, he's a former henchman of hers. He wants her to help him do one more job. And he blackmails her and says that if she doesn't help him, he will make public damning pictures of Catwoman apparently murdering somebody. Because Bruce Wayne was under the impression that Catwoman never killed, which is why he decided to wait for her and ultimately marry her. But he says, well, Bruce Wayne would have never married you if he knew the truth. And if you don't help me do this one job, I'm going to out you, basically. And that's the end of your relationship to Bruce. So Selina agrees. She gets back in her cat suit, and this guy has got a cat suit too. You know, remember how the henchmen used to wear like the cat suits with the ears?
Mm-hmm.
From the 66 show,
yeah,
something along those lines. So they're in the process of a robbery. Commissioner Gordon lights the bat signal. Robin's not around, so Batman's like, "Well, shit, I gotta come." He doesn't say that. I said that. I guess I'm coming out of semi-retirement, and he actually calls it semi-retirement. Or hell on earth urges him to come out of, you know, the commissioner needs you. So Batman swoops in, talks to the commissioner. He looks, by the way. I love the way Stanton draws Batman. It's very classic 70s looking Batman. It's fantastic. So Batman goes to the scene, swoops in, basically knocks the gun out of Silky Cernak's hands. In the process of Batman swooping in and kicking the gun out of his hands during this whole thing, Silky Cernak accidentally pulls the trigger, and the gun fires wildly off to the side, hitting Catwoman. Batman at that point didn't see Catwoman there. He turns around. Catwoman's, you know, been shot. He's cradling her in his arms. She, with her dying breath, says, you know, "I did it to protect you or to spare you. The pain, yeah, I'm sorry, blah, 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 blah." So it's very, very heartfelt scene. I'm not trying to brush over it. Anyway, but so she dies. Bruce is distraught. Basically, can't function anymore. And
so it's actually like okay for him this time around to retire and be upset over a woman and not after only being on the job for a year.
Yeah, I assume you're talking about Dark Knight.
No.
Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises you're talking about? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And thankfully, John Blake was not in this issue. Following the death of Catwoman, as I said, Batman's distraught. The comic cuts to the grave of Selina Wayne and there is a Batman-like shadow at the grave, basically proclaiming a altered version of the oath that Batman did after his parents died, or that Bruce did after his parents died. So it's a similar kind of scene. So for a couple of pages, basically this Batman, quote-unquote Batman figure, we see them doing some actual detective work to locate where Silky Cernak is. We see she gets into the police records to sort of kind of find out, you know, where his haunts are. And then at some point she even bugs his associates so that she can keep tabs on his conversations and stuff. So very, 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 a lot of detective work happening in about two, three pages. Anyway, this bad shadowy figure, you know, stalks him down to the pier. When it's finally revealed that the bat-like figure is not Batman, it's actually the Huntress. She takes him down. She basically leaves him gift wrapped in front of the police department, and as her and Bruce Wayne are you know, handling some last minute, you know, I guess business in relation to the murder of Selina Wayne, you know, Bruce sees him hanging there on a lamp pole in a net, and Bruce makes the comment, "Oh, I guess Dick is back in town. I wonder why he didn't stop by and let us know." And basically, Elena says, "No, it could have been somebody new. And if it is, I think he should be sticking around for a while." So that was essentially her origin story. Her appearance in All-Star number 69 is literally her in shadows. So basically, the general story of that is Psycho Pirate has basically put a spell on the JSA and Bruce Wayne. So they're at odds with each other. Bruce Wayne at this point, several months after, or I don't know if it's months or years, I can't remember what the comic said, but a little while after Catwoman's death, has become the police commissioner, which is fascinating to me. I love this little wrinkle. So he's got his own team of JSAers, and they're going up against a new team of JSAers. It's a mix of new and old characters, but you know what I mean. And basically, he's trying to bring him in to police custody because they're charged with all kinds of infractions because of their, you know, their superheroing, you know, causes property damage, you know, inflicting harm against the innocent, you know, casual bystander. It's basically DC Civil War before Civil War was a thing, minus the you have to reveal your secret identity stuff. It's kind of a mini Civil War. In the altercation, Power Girl, which is Kara Zor-El, which is Earth 2 Superman's cousin, is injured. She's taken to hospital. Bruce is finally shaken out from under the Psycho Pirate spell. And when he actually is confronted by Kara later on in the story, and he basically has a tearful moment where he's distraught. You know, he goes into the whole he's being distraught about Catwoman. But all his friends gather around, you know, the Earth 2 Superman, all the JSAers, you know, Alan Scott, what's his name there, Jay Garrick, Hawkman. They're all there. They're all there's a short fight scene, but most of it's them sort of eventually rallying around Bruce Wayne and trying to, you know, comfort him and whatnot. But there are two scenes with the Huntress, and she's again for most of it in shadows. When Kara was brought to the hospital, she was sneaking around outside of the hospital window to make sure that Kara is okay, because the two of them have a kinship, and this was kind of hinting at their kinship because, you know, she's the cousin of Earth 2 Superman, and Huntress being the daughter of Earth 2 Batman, you know, there's a connection there, mm-hmm. which you'll speak to about in your version. So she's that scene, but you never see her. And then at the end, once she sees that the JSA has snapped her father out of his rut, she's like, okay, good. He's okay. Now I can go about my mission as the Huntress. So basically, she was following Bruce and the JSA around in the shadows to make sure that Bruce would be okay or whatever. Bruce and Kara would be okay. The second appearance is just literally a tease of what's to come for Huntress before she makes her official debut in JSA or in All-Star Comics as a member of the JSA. But the real meat and potatoes is the DC Superhero 17. And Ryan, I like it because, you know, there's the symmetry, or, you know, the similarity of, you know, her mother dying, and she makes the oath, and then Bruce, his parents were killed, and he makes the oath. So that there's that symmetry and that idea of history repeats itself, and kind of, even though it's a negative connotation, coming full circle kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that in my own mind, that I don't necessarily think she needed the death of Selena to eventually become a hero or a vigilante, mm-hmm. because they make mention that they had been training her.
Yeah, but had she ever taken up a code name?
To that point, no.
Okay.
So it might have happened eventually, and part of me thinks it might have, you know, naturally. But I do think that aspect of
probably,
it...
Probably Selena's murder accelerated.
Yeah, yeah. And that is very much, you know, that idea, like I said, it brings things kind of full circle, connects her even more with her father. But also, you know, it's very, as a storytelling device, it's very grandiose. It's very operatic, you know, that. And I think it allows the reader to connect with the character, because we can all imagine how would we react in that situation? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we can kind of sympathize with how far she would go to avenge that scenario. What I really like about this version of the costume, with, you know, the mask has, you know, ears that are very bat-like, you know, like Batman-ish, like the Batman cowl. The color scheme is being purple, largely purple, is in tune with Catwoman's original design. And then it's got the cape, you know, the bluish cape, which again is another nod to her father. So she's got a good mix of her mother and her father, both Batman and Catwoman. It's a good blend. And but it's as I read, because I've made a pledge to kind of go back and read her older stories, it's going to be interesting to see how she becomes her own character. But like I said, the fact that this version leans into that legacy aspect, I think it adds an extra layer of intrigue for somebody like me, because, like I said, I enjoy Helena Bertinelli, right? But when push comes to shove, I have zero connection to the Bertinelli family. Like, nothing. No pull, no, you know, fondness for them. Whereas her being the daughter of Batman and Catwoman, and Catwoman, you know, having been slain, that idea, at least to me, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe
there's a little bit more,
there's an extra pull, yeah.
Yeah, at least to you, there's a little more of a,
yeah,
something me, there for the character.
Me being a hardcore Batman fan, that appeals to me. But also, I've been a big proponent, like I do enjoy, and you could speak to this having podcasted with me for a while now. You know that I enjoy legacy characters, like, you know, how the Flash has a legacy character, how Green Arrow has his, you know, arsenal, and, you know, depending on Young Justice, Speedy, you know, Aquaman has various versions of Aqualad and so on and so forth. I enjoy the legacy aspect of DC characters, and not just because they are, yes, it's an avenue that'll lead me to read or pick up a book, but not just because they're legacy characters. I like to see what makes them different than the people that they are preceding. So Wally West is very different than Barry Allen, right? Connor Kent or John Kent is very different than Superman. And Helena, I'm assuming, or at least from, let me reframe, from the issues that you're going to talk about, she is very different than her father and her mother. And I'm assuming in the issues that I'm going to continue reading on going forward of the older issues, that she's also very different from her mother and father. So it'll be interesting to track that. And I always like seeing how they eventually, you know, steer away from their mentors or their predecessors and become their own character. But that initial draw is always wow, they're part of this, you know, they're the second generation of so and so. That just as a fan, a longtime fan, that's something to me that pulls me in. And again, just before I turn it over to you, I gotta give a shout out to Joe Stanton, because the art is fantastic for me. Like I always dig the old school art, and that version of Batman with the blue and gray, that 70s version, it's I think this is pre Jim Aparo. I could be wrong, but I get Jim Aparo vibes. Jim Aparo, Neil Adam, you know, vibes from this Batman, even though it's Joe Stanton, but it's great. And the two pages that really stand out are the page where he swoops in and kicks the gun out. It's a very action-packed, dynamic page. And the page, the basically the reveal of Huntress was great. And I also, like I mentioned it earlier, the use of shadow to confuse readers to potentially thinking that it might be Batman for a brief moment with the silhouette was very well done. The only negative that I have in regards to this book is the fact that one of the first pages beyond the cover, they give files, like little mini files on each of the characters that are covered in the stories. So they basically tell you that the Huntress has some sort of relation to Batman. And they basically tell you you're going to be seeing a story about the Huntress. So even though those pages of the silhouette that looks like Batman are cool, you kind of already know that it's not going to be Batman. So it's a little bit ruined for you, if you will.
So they should have just put a spoiler alert tag.
Basically. So yeah, but that was the only negative I had. I as an origin story, I loved it. And they were able to tell a story in the third part of a book and make it feel like it was a fully fledged out complete origin. And overall, I loved it, and it left me very much intrigued to continue reading these early adventures of Helena Wayne, aka Huntress.
Now, because I know things obviously changed in 86, 87 with Crisis, but back in the 70s, did Helena Wayne ever cross over to Earth One for anything, or were all Huntress stories only on Earth Two?
No, she apparently there were times where she crossed over to visit Earth One version of Batman. Okay. So not her father kind of thing. I always imagine a scene in the Batcave where he's like, Helena, I am not your, like the Darth Vader scene, but with but apparently there was an issue of there was a holiday issue. I'll try. Let me, you know what? I'm gonna get the issue information while you're talking about your version, but there is a specific issue that where they team up that's of intrigue. So you tell us a little bit about your the version you read, and I'll look that up as you're giving your talk. So go ahead, give us your.
So, I'm not going to go over a huge like history of the New 52 reboot. You know, as a whole massive line-wide thing, new origins for a lot of characters, and among them was obviously Huntress and Power Girl. The reason why I had asked you a little bit ago is of Bruce obviously trained his daughter, but if she ever took up a code name or anything during that time before becoming Huntress. Reason why I asked that was because I found it really cool and interesting that the New 52 Earth 2, the Huntress we have in the New 52 universe, was actually Batman's one and only Robin on that universe. So I thought that was an interesting little, you know, twist on the mythos that, you know, before becoming Huntress, you know, she had been the Robin at one point. And yeah, Bruce was, you know, the one doing most of the training with her, but actually in the Zero issue, it's included that Mommy Selena also did some training as well that Bruce wasn't in the know about, and it upset him sometimes. Your version, the what you told me, it's very a lot more straightforward than what I have in the first volume of the New 52 World's Finest, Huntress and Power Girl, The Lost Daughters of Earth 2. A little bit of backstory is, now, you know, obviously we've talked over Huntress, and like you said, she, you know, the original pre-crisis had made a couple trips over to Earth 1 at Earth Prime, however you want to describe it. I say a lot.
It's okay.
But also Power Girl, you know, the Earth 2 version of Supergirl, you know, maybe had a little bit more of a permanent residence over on Earth 1, and a lot of that was carried over into World's Finest here. For those who don't know, in the multiverse of the New 52 era, at the same time that Darkseid launched his primary invasion of Earth, of Earth 1, Earth Prime, again, you know, whatever, he also launched a simultaneous interdimensional invasion of Earth 2. With Steppenwolf leading the charge there. And fun fact, that's where my knowledge of Steppenwolf came from.
And he was a humanoid-like.
Yes.
Not some kind of CGI creature.
No, he was. He was human. He had a...
Did he say mother every 5 minutes?
No.
Okay, just checking.
He definitely looks cooler in the Earth 2 comic. But I just remember, you know, years ago when it was announced that Steppenwolf was going to be the villain of Justice League, you know, my first reaction, only knowing the character from this timeline, from this era, was, huh, really? They're going to use the Earth 2 villain? Okay, weird. All right. Not knowing anything else about the beforehand. During that invasion, the only... wonders that lived on Earth 2 were Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, along with Robin and Supergirl. The Earth 2 Trinity dies at the hands of Steppenwolf in various different ways, while Robin and Supergirl get sucked through a boom tube back to Earth 1.
Okay.
And, you know, the Lost Daughters of Earth 2 trade paperback that I have, that I read for tonight, kind of picks up 5 years after the fact, because, you know, with the New 52, there's a whole, you know, 5-year timeline, and that can be up for debate as whether or not that was a good idea or not. It was really interesting to see them portray, because I don't know if they did this pre-crisis or post-crisis, or if this was something new for this continuity, okay. But having Power Girl, Karen Starr, be like a billionaire industrialist, you know, and buying up all this technological labs and properties and all that. And at first, you know, you're not really sure why, but then you find out that she's doing it to try and figure out some kind of way to get her and Helena back to Earth 2. And we find out, like, midway through the story, like, how they got all this money. Well, Helena found out that there is a Batman on this Earth, and obviously the security for Wayne Enterprises wasn't as good as Earth 2's Wayne Enterprise security was, so she was able to siphon some money. Hmm. I thought that was a little funny.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Bruce Wayne won't miss whatever she does.
Just, you know, a million here, a million there, you know, once in a while. I'm sure
it's, I mean, fine. He's a billionaire, for God's sake.
Yeah, to him, it's like a little drop in the bucket. I think he'll be fine. One interesting little detail that popped into my head as I was reading it, and then when you mentioned, well, you know, the Huntress, like the purple headpiece or eye mask, whatever, is modeled after Batman's cowl. Mm. I was like, that's interesting, because they kind of did something a little different with it in World's Finest, where actually it's more from Catwoman's mask. Mm. In fact, I kind of get the impression that it actually is, you know, part of Selena's headpiece.
Okay, so you're thinking, yeah.
Yeah. You know, somewhat of a similar story to what you said, that, you know, Selena went off to try and take down a group, and she accidentally gets shot. You know, Supergirl comes in to save young Robin, who kind of just blindly, you know, goes into the burning building, you know, trying to just whoop as much ass as possible. Mm-hmm. There was a cute little wink and nod in the beginning to Bertinelli.
Yeah, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, she uses the code name Bertinelli, right?
It was one of her aliases. Yeah. The opening, the first page shows that she has multiple passports under different names and whatnot. And one of them was Bertinelli, and they kind of make some side comment where it's like, where she was just borrowing the identity from a poor girl who died.
Yeah.
But because she's never really referenced it for Bertinelli again, or even as Wayne or Kyle, like from the Birds of Prey show, she's just Kara only refers to her as Hell.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of got flashbacks every time she said Hell, short for Helena. I just got flashbacks to your eyes twitching whenever Batman and Catwoman would go Bat and Cat.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
it was happening with such frequency, that's why I meant
it. I swear to God, if Pattinson calls her Cat, and if she calls him Bat,
I'm going to break out laughing in the movie theater, and no one around me is going to understand why, because it's going to be... I'll be like...
You're going to hear me yelling all the way from... Like, you'd be in Ohio. And you hear me yelling all the way from Canada saying, what the?
At least here, it was it was only one way. It was just hell. Yeah. It wasn't like Helena was going, car.
Yeah. Yeah, because that would remind me, like, she did that. It's like what kids do here when they're playing street hockey in the middle of the road and a car's coming by. They yell car and everybody moves out of the way.
Here, if we want to go back to Cat, first season of Supergirl, Kira.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, no. Thank God, no. Yeah.
Side note, I miss Cat Grant on Supergirl.
Yeah, she was cool. I like it.
One of the many things I liked about Volume 1 of The World's Finest was it... What's the word I want to use? It appealed to me for my love of Godzilla movies because the main villain... How do you say his name? At first, I thought it was the freaking Anti-Monitor. It looked like the Anti-Monitor. I know it wasn't, but... Well, I'm trying to look up a pronunciation.
I'm trying to remember who that was.
It's H-A-K-K-O-U Haku or something.
Haku, yeah.
Haku. Well, every time I thought Haku, I kept thinking back to Samurai Jack and like.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
It was kind of like a random villain, probably just created for this, and it was fine. It was some unknown creature that had access to apocalypse tech, and every time he absorbed radiation, he got bigger. And a good chunk of the storyline throughout these first 5-6 issues takes place in Tokyo, so we get a giant radioactive monster on the rampage with a Kryptonian having to fight it, and it did kind of make me want to see a fan movie of Superman and Godzilla fighting each other, because that'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm watching.
And I know that we wanted to kind of focus more on Huntress for tonight.
Oh, you can talk about Power Girl if you want.
We all know Power Girl's costume.
Yeah.
I understand why an aspect of that costume appeals to people. I guess that's probably the most diplomatic way I could say it. I prefer this version of the costume.
Right.
Where everything is covered up. Yes, she clearly has a letter P, a stylized version of a P, over one of her boobs.
Right.
And I do kind of find it funny that, to the point of it being a reoccurring joke, that every time the costume gets damaged, it's always the cleavage area that gets exposed. So obviously, you know, with a newly updated costume, they still had moments to reference back to it. I smiled. I guess I've always just looked at Power Girl's costume as why. Like, why would she, probably overthinking character.
Why the boob window, you mean?
Yeah, why boob window? I've always tried to think of it from the character perspective.
Story-wise, it makes no sense.
Absolutely.
Design-wise, it makes, like, logically, it doesn't, like, real-world logical design-wise, it makes no sense. It's just to... How can I do this creatively?
Survey similar functions.
If I use Italy, is that too on the nose?
No, because it's something about Supergirls, because Earth 1 Supergirl, you know, many versions of that character had
her midriff.
The exposed midriff, yeah.
she has the Britney Spears look, and the Earth 2 version has the Pamela Anderson Baywatch look. There, I summed it up.
I fully embrace the idea that I'm just overthinking this, and it's, you know, the answer is it looks cool and it's too, you know, for sex appeal to young kids.
Like, yeah, okay, that pretty much sums it up. Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
I've always had like issues with like, okay, the Huntress mask. Think back to classic original Hawkeye masks.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I've just never seen been able to imagine those being practical in a real world setting.
You mean the domino-ish kind of mask?
Domino mask that sticks up and is pointy. Now, funny enough, the closest I've seen to it, to something like that working, and maybe I just need to visualize it like this from this point on, is Batwoman on CW.
Yeah.
Like, I am so thankful that we never saw Jeremy Renner wearing something like that in the movies.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have worked.
And it looks like from a blurry screenshots from a Birds of Prey TV spot that it looks like Huntress will get just a simple domino mask.
Right, for the movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's similar to what they did with, because Ashley Scott never wore a mask on Birds of Prey.
No, she did not.
Yeah. Crap, I forgot the actress's name from
Arrow. Which at that point I was fine with. Oh, you're talking about the Arrow actress.
Yeah. Arrow.
Oh, Jessica DeGaulle. Yeah.
Yes. She wore, you know, just simple
domino, yeah.
Mask. Yeah, domino mask and whatnot. And, you know, a comment I wanted to make earlier, you know, about like, okay, the Helena Wayne and her story and what she's gone through to you, you know, other people probably share this and other people don't, but to you, it has more character growth and development to it. Whereas, you know, Arrow kind of, while I liked the Bertinelli version that we got on Arrow, and, you know, I'm liking what I've seen so far from Birds of Prey movie, let's face it, and I don't think you said this on air, I think you said this to me, like, you know, off air or on Messenger or something, she's like Bertinelli. Huntress sometimes comes off as like female Punisher.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't dislike the character. I like her. Fine, but I think, you know, to me, when you're limiting, because theoretically when Helena Bertinelli eventually tracks down the killer, the other mafia group that killed her family. Job done. She's done what her objective is, right? Like, it's over. She did what she had to do. Like, you know, she now in the comics she does make the oath to sort of eradicate, you know, mob violence on the whole kind of thing. So she keeps going, but there's an argument to be made that once you apprehend or bring the killers of your family, it's over. Your mission is over. With the daughter of Batman and Catwoman, yes, she wants to bring the killer of her mother, or the man responsible, to justice. But we are now dealing with a Batman that is semi and then later on retired. Who is going to take up the mantle and protect Gotham City? Well, she can. She will. Right? So there's an added layer, I think, to the Helena Wayne character. Also, she has reason to interact with the Bat family because she's part of it. Helena Bertinelli, yes, she interacts with the Gotham heroes, but does she really? Should she really? Does she need to? Not really. The only reason she does is because the pre-crisis iteration did, and that's something that they carried over. Her interaction with the Bat family, and it's a much, I mean, they're much more standoffish to her than, you know, the post-crisis Bertinelli than they were to pre-crisis Wayne. And it makes sense because, again, there's not that familial bond there, or mm-hmm. it's not somebody that Bruce took in and mentored. But also, like I said, the cool thing for me with Helena, and I've discovered this, you know, more later on in my fandom of her, is that what's going to be cool to watch play out is her as a member of the JSA. You know, as again, she's carrying on the legacy of her father. But also, the cool thing is, how does she grow and become her own person? That's the fun of it. Is, yes, there's that tie, but within this, there's room for that growth of, okay, now I'm my own person. Whereas, you know, Bertinelli, she never liked what her family did from the get-go before they were all shot and murdered. So her warring on the mafia is not some, you know, character progression. The idea that I'm not going to kill anybody is character progression. But like I said, I think with Helena Wayne, there are expectations and perceptions and hurdles that character has to become her own hero. And watching her do those things is far more interesting because of the legacy she has to, on one hand, uphold, but on the other hand, she wants to break free of and create her own identity. So you know how there's that more of that push and pull?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about it. And just the idea that we might be getting her back, or it seems like we're going to get Helena Wayne back. I'm very fascinated by that. And I think, I hope that...
Comics-wise, you mean?
Yeah, comics-wise. I hope that DC keeps both versions around and treats them...
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, isn't the Bertinelli version still out there somewhere?
Yeah, she's
I know Birds of Prey, the background Birds of Prey series hasn't, you know, it's stopped a while ago, but...
Yeah, she's out there, and by all means, she should continue to exist. Don't do... See, where I think... And this is nothing against the New 52, it's more DC's handling of it, is...
Mm-hmm.
To say, oh, that was just an alias of some dead person. So just like I'm saying, I'm more of a fan of Helena Wayne.
Uh-huh.
I feel bad for the fans of Helena Bertinelli who, when they read that, say, okay, so now what DC's decided to say is that the version that I was following amounts to what? A dead girl whose name was taken as a, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Again, not the New 52 or the writer's fault. but it, I guess DC editorial to make that decision. So what I'm saying now is, you the multiverse in a certain book. Oh, I'm just gonna say it. Spoilers. Doomsday Clock reinstates the damn multiverse. All right. So read Doomsday Clock if you haven't already. And Ryan's okay with me spoiling that because I told him already. And he fully knows that he's a wait for the trade kind of guy.
So
he might get spoiled unless he tells me not to spoil it for him. But he gave me the okay beforehand. So there. But yeah. So with now with the multiverse reinstated, there's no reason to remove one to showcase the other. Showcase both. One exists on Earth 2 or Earth 1985 or whatever they're calling it, Earth 5G, whatever Earth they want to stick her on. But one exists there, and then Bertinelli exists with the Birds of Prey, and et cetera, et cetera. It's doable. And I think, yes, it's a different version of the Huntress, but all you're going to do is cash in on the eyeballs that Birds of Prey, the movie, puts on that name. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that hero moniker. So, and the reason why I think she's coming back is because not only did Doomsday Clock reinstate the multiverse, but DC is releasing a trade paperback called Huntress Origins, which highlights the adventures or selected adventures of Helena Wayne. And that comes out at, well, by the time you're listening to this, it'll probably be out, but scheduled for release as of this recording on January 22nd. So, you know, next week. Why would they be putting that out? I get to capitalize on the name for the movie, but it still is a different character. Why would they be putting that out if they didn't have larger plans to reintroduce her, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and this is different from the reprint DC just did, again, to capitalize on the movie.
Because that one's called Birds of Prey and then Huntress.
And it reprints the Batman Huntress Cry for Blood, but that one is Bertinelli focused.
Right. So you see why I'm kind of convinced that they're going to bring her back.
Oh, I mean, it wouldn't be, because I see Marvel and DC do this all the time, you know, look at solicitations for stuff, and when they either a big event movie or something big's going on television, or if they're going to reintroduce someone in the comics, they do a whole bunch of reprints of stuff.
Mm, yeah. And they're also reprinting, you know how they have those facsimile dollar issues?
Mm-hmm.
In April, they're releasing the dollar version of the DC Superheroes issue 17 that we just talked about.
Well, then that would be a great way for me to get those, because I love those dollar comics and even the full price how do you say it again?
Facsimile?
Yes, facsimile. That's always been a word I've had trouble with.
That's all right.
You know, because I think that those, you know, and Marvel does something similar. But I'm always biased in favor of DC, so that's what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah,
that, you know, that kind of stuff is always a great one-off gateway.
Yeah,
if you don't want to commit to a full story just yet, so you try out the first issue or an issue for cheap. If you like it, great. Go out and get the graphic novel. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, since I spoiled it already, Doomsday Clock references her. So, I mean, DC's wasting a lot of time if they're not planning on bringing her back. You know what I mean?
I would be surprised if it doesn't happen.
So I'm excited. And
but then, of course, my question would be, which would we have two characters going by the name Huntress on one Earth, or are we going to, or is DC going to do what I would like for them to do, and reestablish the JSA on Earth 2.
That's what I believe they're going to do,
and in my opinion. And have two. Okay.
Yeah. I'm fully of the belief that I want, look, like I said, Doomsday Clock reinstated the multiverse or the metaverse or whatever the hell good old Blue Balls called it. By the way, Blue Balls is Dr. Manhattan for those that are out of the loop. By the way, RIP Watchmen only after one season. But anyway, we'll talk about that another day. So there, you know, if you're reinstating that all these versions are out there on different Earths, to me, if Helena Wayne was part of the JSA, which we know she was, and if the JSA is going to be established on Earth too, have her there. Have her and Kara, aka Power Girl, be part of that team, and then give me another one of these World's Finest books set on Earth 2. Give me a JSA book on Earth 2, and this another World's Finest with these two characters that Ryan spoke about. I mean, whatever version they're going to put on Earth 2, but those two characters come, because that book was, I've read the book that you spoke of, and it was one of my favorites of the New 52 era. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Because I love that they kept World's Finest,
yeah, but
it was Earth 2, Supergirl, yeah, and Robin. So it was a twist on what you would normally think of World's Finest.
So give me that on Earth 2. But I've been, you know, you and I are the same way. We've been advocating Earth 2 stories or using the multiverse for a while now on this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm with you. I hope that's the route they go. It would be the minute you bring her back on whatever Earth the main continuity is, 5G, whatever the hell it ends up being called eventually, then you're running into issues where DC is going to, that's where I fear where DC could get into the wrong habit of melding the two characters and making it so that while one is active, the other doesn't exist. And that, to me, there's no need for that, because you're going to have Bertinelli, who's hopefully going to have some popularity because of Birds of Prey. Why would you take her off the table entirely when you have an easy out and it's called the multiverse? Where in this case, you can have your cake and eat it too. Because they're two separate cakes.
Oh, then again, you know, all I gotta say is that would be cool, but look at who's been in charge for a long time and how many.
The deal, you say?
Yeah, I was just wasn't gonna say names, but.
Oh, he's not gonna come on this podcast either. He doesn't even know we exist.
How many freaking continuity reboots have happened under his tenure, and just. You know, this is now going to be the second time that he's tried to make a timeline work.
Yeah. All I'm going to say is embrace the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Take your cues from Doomsday Clock and build out from there, is what I say. But, you know, to sort of kind of wrap this episode up, right, so you'd recommend would you?
Oh, absolutely. If you can find it for cheap, because guys, the trade paperback I got for World's Finest Volume 1, Lost Daughters of Earth 2, I had to pay like $60-$70 for that on Amazon. So if you can find like a decently priced copy somewhere, go pick it up. It's real good. It's funny. I love the banter between Helena and Karen. It really is funny. It's real good. A lot of good action scenes. A lot of gorgeous shots with their them in costume in action. It real good. Real good story. And it's written by Paul Levitz with artwork by George Perez and Kevin Maguire. So it looks wonderful.
Yeah. And I know Ryan advocates for the physical copy, but if you can't find one for cheaper than $70, You can always go to Comixology and pay 12.
Or if you have the DC Universe app, it might be on. It's on there.
Yeah. But if you're in Canada, sorry, you don't have the
exactly. That only applies to the to U.S. residents.
And Travis, that one was for you, my friend. Go nuts. but yeah, and I would advocate the story that I read because it is her first appearance, and I always dig reading those kind of stories and how what the first iteration of that particular character looked like. Like I said, the story was very straightforward. It didn't give you a headache. Trying to figure out what was what, who was who. It's very succinct. It does a lot of explaining. You'll get, if you're dissatisfied with Batman number 50 and the lack of a wedding, well, you'll get one here without immature dialogue. I think especially you have now two opportunities to search this character, this version of the character out with the upcoming Huntress Origins graphic novel that's being produced, and also with the facsimile $1 edition of DC Superstar number 17. So you have ample opportunity to get your hands on Helena Wynn pre-crisis Huntress stories, and I definitely advocate doing so. And I have to give a shout out in particular, if for whatever reason you don't want to read either of these comics, which shame on you, you should support the industry, folks, that these movies and TV shows come from. But if for whatever reason you don't want to read these issues, or if you want to do a deep dive and find out which stories to read and what chronological order you should read them in, I would recommend going to a specific website it's run by a guest that we're going to have on for our premiere episode of Birds of Prey review. The website is, let me pull it up here, it's HelenaWayneHuntress.com, and you will see podcasts on the subject matter. There's a reading time, there's a timeline of what stories to read first. Like, there's a whole, you can get, you know, chronological order. Honestly, the person who runs the website, Diane, to me, since I found the website, I think she is the preeminent source on all things Helena Wayne Huntress. And I'm not just saying that because she's going to be a guest on the show. I really do dig the website. She doesn't gatekeep and tell you what to like, what not to like as certain websites out there. It's fantastic. It's a great resource, and it'll give you all the information you want to know. So I definitely recommend, I'll say it again, HelenaWayneHuntress.com, and you'll find a bevy of information there. And it's and hey, if you check it out, you'll be prepared for when she comes on for the podcast. So that's the extra bonus. But I definitely recommend that you check it out, and our listeners. And Ryan, give it a perusal yourself, so you'll be prepared for when she comes on. That's your homework, sir, to peruse the website. But yeah, I think thumbs up on both those incarnations that we told you about tonight. We're not going to rate the issues at this point. I mean, we could have, but we won't. We just wanted to call attention to them and give you a little bit of a primer to these different versions or varied versions of this same character. But that brings it to a close. So, Ryan, if our good listeners would want to talk to you more about the New 52 World's Finest stories, or just DC in general, where can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on the Twitters at the Amazing Rye Guy. I screwed up that joke.
It's
been a long week, a long day. I'm sorry.
It's the multiverse of Twitter. So Earth 1 version of you is there, and
oh my god,
Earth 40. I don't know.
All I know is that no matter how many universes are out there in the entire Ryan multiverse, we're all just exhausted.
Hey, maybe there's one universe version of you that's rich and doesn't have to work. Then he's not exhausted.
But he would still stay in bed a lot.
Right, but he probably has a butler. And if he's got any good sense, he'll, it's named Alfred. And it's alive, unlike Tom King. Unlike Batman's Ghost Spoiler. Thanks to Tom King.
I'm still saying by the time the Batman movie comes out, I think Alfred's going to be back.
Well, he better be, because I think that was a stupid decision. Anyway, if you want to find me and talk about how much I despise Tom King's arc, or the Helena Wayne Huntress, or the Helena Kyle Huntress on Birds of Prey, or if you want to just share in your adoration of that TV series and Ashley Scott, you can do that with me at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. No, actually, you can't do that there, because that account is deactivated.
See, I'm not the only one.
Folks, listen, it's Friday. I did a podcast yesterday. We're doing another one tomorrow. I don't know what's what, when's when. But my actual Twitter is Adam_LeafsFan. That's where you can interact with me. And if you like Tom King's run, you can talk to me too, because I'm not going to gatekeep. Whatever gets you into Batman is fine by me. But that's it. Adam_DSFan again, if you want, in there. And we will be back very soon, at least for us recording. But until next time, stay within the Gotham City limits and join us next time. Same bad time, same bad channel. So long, everybody.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman!